Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, hello and welcome once again to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. I always appreciate the opportunity to get together with you, and we're going to jump right into our conversation today to use up the time that we have with our guest, who is a return guest, and glad to really dive into the latest book that he has co-written. We're going to talk about 40-40 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. Now, maybe you're not anywhere near midlife, or you're right in the middle of it, you're going to find great insight and benefit from the conversation today. Let me introduce my guest. Peter Greer is the president and CEO of Hope International. It's a global Christ-centered microfinance organization serving throughout Africa, Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. And Peter has written several books and speaks. He's been a conference speaker at places like Catalyst and Passion. And I think the last time we talked, we were talking about mission drift, and we've also talked about the spiritual danger of doing good. Those are a couple of books that he's written. The new one, though, he co-wrote with Greg Lafferty. Pastor and Peter have both experienced a little bit of midlife, and so they've got some insights to draw from us. Peter, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for having me, Neil.
Now, I know that as you mentioned the book, that at one point there was a picture of you at a picnic or something with the family, only you didn't really recognize it because it was a picture from the back, and there was actually a growing bald spot on the back of your head. Is that the sign that we've reached midlife?
Oh, thanks for starting with that uplifting story, Neil.
Yeah. But yeah.
You know, everyone faces it differently, but everyone comes at a point where they realize the brevity of life. They realize that things that at one point you seem to have nothing but time, and then you come to a moment where you realize time is passing by really quickly. Things start changing with our bodies, and whether that is a hairline or that is a wrinkle that doesn't seem to be going away, just seems to be getting bigger. We all come to this point where we're forced to realize that life is short. And instead of being a depressing time, I think that those sorts of conversations actually open the door to one of the most important set of questions you're ever going to ask. But this life, it is short, so how do you want to spend it? How do we want to live? What really provides meaning and joy and satisfaction? What do we really want to spend our life building? And it's those questions that, yes, changes in the body oftentimes will prompt us to ask.
Well, we'll work our way through some of those important questions during our conversation today. The book is called 40-40 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. I was interested because you start out early on in the book about pointing out some research that suggested that happiness is at its lowest point in midlife. And I guess it seemed like conventional wisdom would say, well, you know, we're at a high level of physical fitness, career success, and, you know, things would seem like we're peaking in a number of areas. So, but yet it's kind of just the opposite. Why is that?
No, you're exactly right. Yeah, so in some ways, it seems like this time of life, you finally have accumulated some things, maybe the family that you've always wanted. You're at that stage, and yet, according to the research, life satisfaction steadily declines in the 20s and 30s, and it bottoms out in the 40s. And this isn't just something that is happening in the United States of America. Researchers showed that in 55 of 80 countries where they asked a similar survey, that the exact same pattern held, that life satisfaction steadily declines in 20s and 30s and bottoms out. And the global low point, if you want to get even more specific, the global low point is age 46. So if you're listening today and you're 46, at least empirically, that oftentimes is the point where people report the lowest levels of satisfaction and happiness. And so the interesting question is why? Why is that? And this is really an area of personal interest. And so just a little more. So So Greg and I are friends, and I watched Greg walk through his 40s. And 40s, this time, Gordon MacDonald says that oftentimes these are dangerous and uncharted waters. Victor Hugo said it is the old age of youth and the youth of old age. It's a time of transition. It's a time of oftentimes feeling wandering. And it's due to a couple things. One is that some people that set these goals about a promotion or a title or a certain amount of money or a certain thing of life stage, people that have said, when I finally achieve X, Y, and Z, then I'll be happy. Then I will really have what my deepest needs are met. It's oftentimes in our 40s, it's when we start catching those dreams and we realize that they actually don't deliver the advertised happiness. Or for other people, maybe it's because we start giving up hope that we ever will achieve our dreams, we ever will achieve those things that we set out. So I think there's a variety of reasons, but again, just as you said, Neil, empirically, this is a turbulent time. And just one other thing on that is that it's not just for men. Oftentimes we think of the midlife crisis stereotype as being a turbulent time for men, and yet the data also shows that this is a turbulent time for women, and even a higher percentage of women report this time in life to be even more turbulent. And so, again, this is hardwired into the human existence, we believe.
Well, as you know, as you said, it can be a dangerous time. We don't use the word crisis lightly all the time because it can be dangerous, right? Whether, marriages are blowing up, just the health turning, financial collapses. A number of things can happen and maybe often do during this time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even the term, the midlife crisis, that was coined by a Canadian psychologist named Elliot Jack in 1965. And he said that this is a crisis. He said it is caused when people are forced to look their mortality in the eyes, when people realize the brevity of life. And so for some people, the response is, life is short, I want to eat, drink, and be merry. And yet for all of us, this is a time to maybe recalibrate our vision, to reconsider what matters. But it wasn't just Elliot Jack who came up with this term in 1965. It was really interesting. Even reading Dante in the Divine Comedy in the year 1308, so a whole long time ago before there's modern psychology, but even in the Divine Comedy, he talks about this. He says, midway of life we're bound upon, I woke to find myself in a dark wood where the right road was wholly lost and gone. So in 1308, Dante's talking about, I'm at the middle of my life, and I find myself in a dark wood where the right road is wholly lost and gone. And we believe it wasn't in 1308 that these questions were started, but you can actually trace it back to the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes and to see that these questions of meaning and purpose are hardwired into the human existence. And I believe that oftentimes midlife is the moment when we get to wake up and say, life is short. How are we going to spend it? What ultimately matters?
Well, this book is a wonderful summary, using the book of Ecclesiastes as an opportunity to ask some of those questions. And, Peter, I think, many times we sort of maybe overlook Ecclesiastes, say, well, yeah, it's an kind of an interesting book, but sort of sobering, and it doesn't, it doesn't sort of have that that happy, good feeling to it. So why is this a good book to be looking at when we're in the midst of this season or want to be asking these questions?
Ecclesiastes is a crazy book, Neil. And if you're just opening up your Bible, hoping for some, moment of inspiration, and you open up to the book of Ecclesiastes and you start reading through certain sections, you will be shocked. The reason is because Ecclesiastes is a brilliant book that does an incredible experiment. It does an experiment saying, let's take a relationship with God out of the picture, and then let's look at everything that this life has to offer, and let's take it to its logical conclusion. So it looks at entertainment. Let's take that to its logical conclusion, take God out of it, and let's see what we're left with. It becomes a crazy experiment of kind of staring at the sun and then saying how badly it hurts. It's this experiment of saying, if there is not a God that we can have a relationship with, if there is no covenantal relationship with God, let's look at all that life has to offer and let's see what it looks like. But it's written from either King Solomon or someone writing as if he was King Solomon. someone who had experienced everything that this life has to offer, literally making gold as common as stone, and someone who had military success, someone who had wisdom that was unparalleled, someone who had 700 wives, 300 concubines, just in anything in terms of pleasure that we could try to find to delight the human heart. And so this book looks at item after item. A relationship with God is taken away, and the ultimate conclusion of the teacher is this is all meaningless. When you take God out of the equation, you can have a whole bunch of experiences, you can build a whole bunch of buildings, and ultimately you can come to the conclusion that this is not what ultimately matters.
Well, that's the word that kind of runs through the book of Ecclesiastes, meaningless, and we're going to spend some time talking about that and immortality and connection and all those things in the moments ahead as we continue to unpack this great new resource called 4040 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. And my guest today, Peter Greer, is the co-author of this. He wrote it along with Greg Lafferty. Peter's president, CEO of Hope International. It's a global Christ-centered microfinance organization serving throughout the world, Africa, Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. And Peter has written several books, including Mission Drift and The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good and The Poor Will Be Glad and Stop Helping Us and Watching Seeds Grow. And he and his wife live in Pennsylvania with their three children, and he's in the midst of experiencing this very thing. So we're learning about what it means to walk through midlife from a wise book in the Bible. We'll talk more about Ecclesiastes with Peter Greer in just a moment on Connecting Faith. Listening to Connecting Faith, and we're happy to have connected today with Peter Greer, who is the president and CEO of Hope International, and he's author of a new book called 4040 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. It's a book that takes us to the well-known Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. It's maybe well-known to us in the single word meaningless. All is meaningless, and that's one of the early chapters in the book 4040 Vision. So let's jump in the word meaningless. What can we learn about life's meaning through Ecclesiastes?
You know, it's interesting. It's almost like the process of elimination. You have to systematically go to the areas where we might pursue meaning and show how they don't ultimately satisfy until you're ready to reach the conclusion. And so, again, that's what this master teacher does. He brings us through each of the different areas. He says, let's look at this issue and let's figure out if it provides any meaning. But again, the scope of this book is so important. There's this phrase that is repeated throughout the book, under the sun, under the sun, under the sun. And so under the sun means, again, under the natural world as we have, taking our relationship with God out of it. But there are so many pieces that if you take God out of it, life just doesn't seem to make sense on it. And like the writer of Ecclesiastes, maybe there are times we just feel, man, what do people gain from all this work, all this time that I've just been spending? I just built this company, and now someone's going to take over, or it's going to be sold, and everything that I built is going to be dismantled. Or this relationship that I thought was going to provide the meaning of my life, and it doesn't actually provide what it was. So, or maybe this pleasure, maybe this vacation, we might enjoy it, but it just seems to go so quickly, and things that used to bring us pleasure maybe no longer bring that same amount. So again, that's the option. That's the thing that this book, the book of Ecclesiastes, has to really offer us, is let's think soberly, let's think intentionally about all of these areas, and let's come up with whatever it is that we think life is going to find meaning and purpose outside of a relationship with God, and let's take that to its logical conclusion. And I think, just looking at this personally, my conclusion was, I am so thankful that we don't have to look at life from an under-the-sun perspective. I am so thankful that there is meaning, there is purpose, because the one who is above the sun entered into our pain, entered into this world, and gives a different perspective on all of life and gives us hope that we all desperately need.
So is there a, maybe just as a exercise, even as we're going through this, if people don't have a chance to listen to our entire conversation, say, well, is there a takeaway? Are there a handful of questions that we ought to actually write down and maybe, you know, get away for a half a day or journal, or, you know, how do we get started in looking at these big life issues?
Yeah, you know, I think about the opportunity that we have, because I think there are different stages in life. In the 20s, we start to think out, saying, "Can I make it? Can I hack it? Can I get that job? Can I start?" And then, oftentimes in the 30s, it's about chasing success. And so, I think at some point in midlife, I think the opportunity is to sit down and say, "Where am I now? What are those areas that I thought would provide the meaning and satisfaction? I thought when I achieved that area that then everything would be better. And did it really produce, did it really give you the advertised happiness?" And so, again, talking about Ecclesiastes, talking about midlife, I think there are some people that could say, that sounds like the most depressing thing I could ever spend time doing. And yet, I found this to be incredibly hopeful. And the reason we even talk about 40-40 vision is I think life looks differently if you live with the end in mind. How would you live differently if you knew that you had a certain amount of time left? And that's the invitation of midlife. The clock is on. The game is going. How do you want to spend? And almost to say, at the end of my life, how do I want to live? What do I really want the legacy to be? And so there's this individual, David Brooks, who talks about eulogy virtues and resume virtues. And I found this just so compelling. The resume is about the titles. It's about the careers. It's about the path that we took. And yet at the end of the life, those things don't seem to matter quite as much. And instead, when someone listens to a eulogy, oftentimes it's the acts of love and compassion. It's not the people that did the big business deals that tend up showing. It's the people that were closest to you. And so I think the opportunity that we're given in thinking about this stage of life is to say, let's live today with the end in mind. Let's think about the logical conclusion that one day there will not be breath in our lungs, and what do we want to spend our life on today with the end in mind? And so that's really why we think about 40-40 vision, because we believe that we live differently today when we realize that life is short, and there is meaning and there is purpose, and live with the end in mind.
You know, when we've gotten to this point, this stage in life, we've all gone through some disappointments when life didn't go as planned. You address that in the book as well. Say a word about how to handle and face disappointments.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I don't know anyone that gets through this period of life without having some disappointments. Maybe the disappointments are with ourselves, that we just didn't live the way that we thought we should, or maybe our disappointments are with our family, that maybe we're in a spot where our kids are not living as we thought that they would, or making decisions that we know would be best for them. There comes a point where we feel disappointed. And the question is, what do we do with that? What do we do when life under the sun is full of disappointments? Oftentimes, it's possible to just feel like devastated by the failures of us or people around us, and that oftentimes lead to some dangerous and destructive behavior. I think the better opportunity is to have the disappointments that we face to free us from the unrealistic expectation that under the sun we're going to find ultimate meaning, that everything is going to be rosy and cheery, when we can finally be freed from the expectation that all of life is going to be a series of belly laughs and joyous moments, and that are going to match the online avatars that we create of ourselves, of one joyful moment to another. When we can realize that life isn't like that, then we can be free from the unrealistic expectations that this life, and actually be free from the power of disappointment to really derail us in living with purpose and with passion.
I assume that as you've had opportunity to travel, as you're in your role as CEO, president of Hope International, you're working in microfinance, so you're working in some of the very poorest of the poor, that you've had opportunity to see maybe differences in the discontentment levels, because that seems like that's sort of in our blood these days when you're talking about unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, there's no question that the job that I'm so privileged to do in traveling around the world and having time with entrepreneurs and partnering with local churches and working with families so they can have a hand up instead of just waiting for another handout. I mean, that definitely has framed my perspective and of what matters. But the interesting piece in that is that I truly believe that that happiness, that life satisfaction and wealth are not perfectly correlated. If it were true that wealth really does lead to happiness, then America would be one of the happiest nations on earth, and yet we're not. We're not even close. And so oftentimes, I think there is the opportunity to have a different perspective. And again, that's what travel sometimes does to places of poverty. That also is what this season in midlife can do, is we can pop the illusions that oftentimes we've bought into, that wealth is going to bring happiness. And we can be free from the constraints of just chasing a never-ending cycle of materialism, or we can be free from this idea of trying to preserve our body, that youth and beauty are the highest goal, and we can be free to pursue wisdom. We can be free from the opportunity to just be devastated by failure, devastated by disappointment. We can be free from that to live with purpose and passion. And so again, that's again the brilliance of this opportunity that the author of Ecclesiastes gives us, is to look and think soberly about all these things that we thought would satisfy, and to use midlife as a time to say, you know what, it's just not good enough. We can do more. This is one author that I really appreciate, and he talks. He kind of summarizes this whole piece, but he says, money isn't secure enough. The sex isn't thrilling enough. Entertainment isn't impressive enough. Music isn't interesting enough. Food isn't satisfying enough. People aren't reliable enough. This world isn't good enough. And so when you kind of can be free from finding your fulfillment in any of those areas, I believe then you can find an above-the-sun perspective of meaning, of passion, of purpose. And that's what, it's just been so fun to think through and then want to spend my life pursuing.
Mm. Peter Greer is president and CEO of Hope International. It's a global Christ-centered microfinance organization serving throughout Africa, Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. And Peter has written several books. He's been a featured speaker at conferences such as Catalyst and Passion and the Harvest International's Development Conference. He's been featured in Christianity Today and Relevant and other magazines. He's been our guest in the past when we talked about mission drift. He's also written The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good. And this new book he's co-written with Greg Lafferty, it's from InterVarsity Press. It is a great reading because it's taking a book in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes, that spends a lot of time dealing with those questions about meaning and purpose and helps us clarify our mission in midlife. It's called 40-40 Vision. And we're going to talk more about it and jump into some of the more great chapters in this book as we continue here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. More with Peter Greer coming up. This is Connecting Faith. Today we're talking vision, 40-40 vision, clarifying your mission in midlife. And as we've learned that oftentimes the kind of the low point in the satisfaction centers in our 40s, and maybe you're in that season right now, and you're asking some of those important questions, some of the why questions, and wondering maybe what's hasn't quite gone like you'd like. We're getting some fresh insight today from Peter Greer, who has co-authored this new book called 40-40 Vision. Peter's president, CEO of Hope International. It's a global Christ-centered microfinance organization working around the world. And Peter, should just say a word about the book, because the book has the titles that you address have sort of the positive and negative included in them. Just say a little bit about how you laid the book out.
Yeah, so it was so much fun to work with a friend. As you know, Neil, everything that I've done with a friend. I think writing together is just a fantastic process. And so Greg, pastor, deep thinker, when we started thinking through the themes of Ecclesiastes and really the big questions of life, and seeing this time in life, midlife, as a key moment to think about the big questions, we found that there was this kind of play on words that oftentimes just adding a suffix or a prefix oftentimes can change the meaning significantly. So we can talk about the word meaningless, or we can talk about meaning. We can talk about disappointment, or we can talk about an appointment. We can talk about insatiable, or we can talk about satiable. We can talk about being mortal or immortal, charitable or uncharitable, rest or unrest, age or ageless. And so kind of going through each of these different areas and seeing that we have an opportunity, ageless, we have an opportunity to say, yes, our bodies are falling apart, and it is a slow process, and I don't know anyone who enjoys it, but the question is, how are we going to think about this? How are we going to respond to this reality? Are we going to fight it and just go down winging, or are we going to find peace that these bodies, yes, they are wasting away, yes, we do want to take care of them, but it is possible to inwardly be renewed. And so each of these issues, I think it's a choice. It's a choice of how we think about aging. It's a choice about how we think about our finances. It's a choice about how we deal with disappointment. All of these areas, whether it's friendship or finances, midlife is a time to recalibrate our vision and to say what matters, what is the perspective that we want to have, and to boldly, not being afraid, to look at the end of life and then say, how would we live differently if we kept that day, that time, in the forefront of our mind?
And I think we all probably can think of a person or two, or maybe several, who seem to have sort of grown up gracefully and you know, continue to, in their senior years, live with hope and joy and contentment. And so is there some value in us sort of connecting with maybe an older mentor to just help us walk through this, even if they're just like Greg, about 10 years older than you, right?
I think that friendship, especially intergenerational friendship, is one of the greatest gifts that we have. I don't think there's any question of that. And, you know, there are some people that have talked about how, for many people, the modern church experience that segregates groups based on age, we miss the beauty of intergenerational friendships. And so definitely walking with Greg has been a gift, or walking with my grandpa has been a gift. When you get to see people that are living fully with vitality, have made peace with a lot of these issues, that is a gift. And I think in our culture, I think we've gotten this wrong. I think we've associated new and shiny as things that have value, and we've discounted the old. And yet in many other cultures around the world, there is much more of a celebration of aging, the accumulation of wisdom, the accumulation of all of these experiences, and saying, these are a gift. And so we can kind of, you know, mourn the physical aspect of the aging process, or we can actually celebrate. Think of the wisdom, think of the experiences, think of all that we have, and then how can we use those experiences and pour them into the lives of others? So I hope there is a change perspective on aging, and again, this gift of aging, the gift of experience that should be shared in relationships with others.
You know, as you talk about intergenerational friendships and relationships, I know we're living in an age of electronic connections. So how do we develop and maintain real connections that carry us through the second half of life? Because being disconnected is one of the realities of our modern life as well.
Neil, I want to hear your responses to these questions. You're asking some great questions, and I think in many ways I've enjoyed prompting the questions and not necessarily being prescriptive with the answers. But I think that's a great one. And I think a couple of things. One is I think we would care about our online relationships less, and we'd care more about the relationships with people around us. The gift of friendships. I had a friend in Africa tell me that at any time, if you were living in this culture, said you always must have four friends that you can call on at any time, day or night, and you know they'll show up. And so I asked, why four? And he said, well, four is the number of people that carry a stretcher. So you always want to have four friends. And yet in our culture, maybe we don't need someone to carry a stretcher, but the average individual is devoid of deep friendships. And it's kind of sobering, too, that after age 36, at least for men, there will not be any new significant lifelong friendships that will be added. So take care of the ones that you have. Take care, invest in those friendships. And again, the gift of intergenerational is huge, but I just think you start caring less about some sort of social media relationships, and you care more about the people that that you know you could call at 3 a.m., and you know they'd show up to maybe figuratively carry your stretcher. Those are the types of relationships that, in thinking through this, I've tried to be more intentional about investing in.
Well, in fact, I know we were just kind of joking a little bit before the program began that you know, thanks to your wise wife, you had an opportunity to kind of recalibrate your travel and your work. I mean, obviously, you're heading an international organization, so there's you know, whenever you're gone, it could be gone for a long time and a long distance. But obviously, no matter what our age is, we still can make some changes. And it would seem like, you know, pausing and investing in friendships and relationships probably is a good first step to take, isn't it?
Yeah. And the book of Ecclesiastes has some of those great lines about a cord of three strands is not easily broken, or when you fall down, you know, pity the person who has no one to help them up. It's one of the things that even in the under-the-sun perspective, even as the author of Ecclesiastes is looking for meaning and satisfaction, one of the best conclusions that he comes with is this gift of friendships. I believe it is one of life's greatest gifts. It's the gift of friendship, the gift of relationships. And yet, just personally, I spent the early years as I was trying to grow an organization, I spent my time building resume virtues instead of eulogy virtues. I spent my life thinking about growth rates and about success in a very narrow definition of success. And I just am so grateful for my wife who called me on it. And we had a moment. And one of the things coming out of that was I wrote my resignation letter and I gave it to Laurel. And I told her, if you ever feel that I am not fulfilling my job as your husband and as dad to these precious kids, I would love for you to mail my resignation letter, and I will walk away, because what I do vocationally is not as important as the job that I have to love God and to love you and to love these kids. And so she hasn't sent the letter yet, but it's just a simple way that I feel like that was a turning point for me. A turning point, again, it happened right around midlife, to say, I don't want to spend my life building my career and look back and say, I missed these precious years of investing in the people that are going to be with me, Lord willing, at the end.
As long as we're talking about careers, you do address that as well, because men, it seems like particularly, are wrapped up in their careers. I mean, that's, you know, who we are outside of our work. I mean, we kind of struggle with that. You know, Ecclesiastes helps us work through some of those questions too, doesn't it?
It does. And I feel like, again, one of the benefits of this ancient book, it was written so long ago. And the more that we study this, these issues are exactly the same today. They haven't gone away. So you look at, again, you look at Solomon and think of all that he did. Think of all the things that he did. He ended up doing all of these building projects. It was incredibly successful. There was no one more successful than him. And his conclusion is, I hated life because the work that's done under the sun was grievous to me. And so, again, someone who, we literally get the word paradise for the word that he had for his gardens. His gardens were paradise. We can see from the ruins, we can see his cisterns, we can see all of the things that he did, and yet his conclusion is all of this success, it didn't really ultimately matter. And yet today, you're exactly right. We spend our lives pursuing vocationally one success after another. And this is really so grateful to Bob Buford, who wrote the foreword. I think that he was really one of the early people to prompt this conversation when he wrote the book Halftime, of saying, eventually you come to a point in your career where you say, what's it all for? What am I going to do at this point? And some people are going to stay, and they're going to choose to stay in their career, and I think they're going to do it differently. They're maybe going to see their company as an opportunity for them to really, really love on their employees and to be innovative about the way that they take care of their customers and suppliers. But it's no longer going to be about building themselves up. It's going to be about building people around. Other people, I have a friend, Chris, who decided at his shortly after his 40th birthday, he was an executive in a telecommunications company, and his decision was to take a break. And so the way that he took a break was working for Hope International, moving with his family to Rwanda, and having a totally different experience that, from a career track perspective, maybe didn't make a sense, but for a perspective of what am I going to do with my life? I've always wanted to do something like this. Maybe now is the moment. And he was just free from only thinking about career, his career trajectory in a professional setting as the only thing that mattered to him. And so, again, this is where the questions are different. The questions are the same, but the conclusions could be different. Some are going to choose to stay exactly where they are. Other people are going to make a significant transition. But the point is simply that we're not going to let our careers control us. We're going to make decisions based maybe more courageously that aren't going to be based on fear, but are going to be based on a bold recognition that this life is short. We've been given today. How do we want to spend it?
We're learning about who we are and what we should become in the years ahead, what God has designed for us. We're getting some clarifying vision today. 40-40 Vision is the book we're referencing, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. It's written by Peter Greer and Greg Lafferty. Peter is the president and CEO of Hope International, and he's an author and speaker. He's our guest today. We're going to continue with another segment as we'll talk a little bit about hurry and about when life doesn't go as planned, some of those things as well. More just ahead with Peter Greer. Well, you're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected with Peter Greer. Grateful to have him back on with us here in the broadcast. We are looking at his great new book that's asking a lot of really important questions and helpful questions as we look at maybe kind of recalibrating the days that God has given us. We're told in Psalm 90 to number our days and realize how short they are. And if you're anywhere in your 40s, or if you can remember your 40s, then this is a book that will help you. It's called 40-40 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. Peter Greer, President and CEO of Hope International, is with us today. By the way, if you want to find out more about this book or Peter's other writings or the great work of Hope International, you can connect with him on his website, peterkgreer.com. Check that out, peterkgreer.com. Peter, one of the quotes in the book, quote Dallas Willard, his advice was to a friend was to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. That's a powerful statement. How have you maybe worked through some of that?
It was interesting. Remember when technology was supposed to help with productivity and give us more time, and we were going to be down to a 4-day work week because technology was going to I don't know about you, but that's not my experience. It's possible to literally wake up, jump onto email before you've even gotten out of bed. It is possible to the last thing that you're doing to be working. And so instead of giving more margin, it has given us less a margin. And so this idea of busyness, it has become a hallmark of modern day life. And I think the first part is just to recognize it, and maybe to recognize that the current path that we're on, maybe that is not the one that we have to be on. So one kind of practical thing is just, again, because knowing my own temptation with technology, when I come home, I put my phone literally in the drawer. I hear more and more families that are doing this, of just having a no screen zone. And so over dinner, there's no one who's getting interrupted. And so I literally, from the moment that I get home to the moment that my kids are in bed, my phone is safely away in a drawer, and almost to create some sort of a guardrail from myself. And so that's one thing. Otherwise, there's a new term called digiphrenia. It's a word that was described how technology allows us to be in more than one place at the same time. And so we think we're in both places. We think we're still tapping away on an email while we're also with our kids. And yet the reality is we're not doing either of those well. And oftentimes, in our attempt not to miss anything, we actually miss everything. And so this creating, again, just simple guardrails to help us protect, again, time and space for health, for margin, for devotion, for relationship. I believe that simple practices can help us. And I think ultimately the best thing was designed by God, who knows us perfectly, who designed us. And so this idea of Sabbath, where literally 1 out of 7, there's a change of pattern, there's a change of behavior. And yet, I think in today's modern world, that is the one of the Ten Commandments that is oftentimes seen as a simple suggestion that is glossed over. And yet, we need it. And so, whatever it is, in my family, it is trying to honor the Sabbath, to have that as a day that is set aside for relationships, for recharging, to have simple ways to not let technology control us.
Peter, you know, I was thinking about, you know, despite all our efforts to plan and prepare, and we build discipline in our lives, you know, we try and stay fit, life doesn't always go as we planned. How do we handle maybe the unexpected? And maybe out of that, there's this sort of sense of loss of control that comes our way from time to time.
What is the promise of Jesus? In this world, you will have troubles.
Yeah.
You don't see that kind of crocheted on pillows or put up on wall plaques. And yet, that's maybe the expectation that, again, then we enjoy these moments that we're given, but we expect that there are going to be challenges. We understand that this world is broken, and we look forward, longing, hoping, waiting, expecting a day when it's all going to be made right again. And so that's kind of how I want to live, not to be surprised when things don't go according to plan, but actually to use those moments to have even more hunger, more excitement about the day that's going to come.
You know, one of the things we've sort of circled around but haven't really dealt with is you addressed generosity in the conversation. Talk about what part that plays in a 40-40 vision.
Yeah, so 40-40, this time of midlife oftentimes is when we start to think with, you know, financial planners. They start to think about retirement. We start to think, have I been saving enough? We start to think about maybe college bills are looming or starting to come in. And this is a time when we need to make peace with our finances. And again, this is one of the areas where I think my perspective has been significantly impacted by my work that I do and traveling around the world and entering into homes. Just last week, I was in a home. It was a Haitian Bété in a sugarcane field. It was a community. It was extreme poverty, and yet in this community, if wealth and happiness were perfectly correlated, this would have been a place of just absolute misery. And there certainly was pain and suffering. And we certainly believe that we are called to respond to the needs in a way that makes a difference. But I have found that there are places and pockets of incredible joy that exist in the midst of poverty. People that have a faith that is so much stronger than mine. People that have found a joy that I'm envious of. People that have relationships and a true community that are so much deeper than I have. And I also have met with people that have incredible prosperity and incredible wealth and are miserable. There's an article that was in Time magazine that talked about at a certain point, and in the article they talked about 70,000. They talk about after that point of financial success, they talk about all the things that we look for, the right home, the right wardrobe, and a desirably small sizes, the right wealth, the right all of these things, all of the material things, and they talk about the slow ebb that they just actually, the amount of time and energy taking care of them, the amount of time and energy that they take, their conclusion was that it actually is a peak and then it goes down. That the more stuff does not bring more satisfaction. And so I think that's another opportunity that we have in midlife is to say the equation of stuff plus more stuff plus more stuff plus even more stuff equals more happiness. I believe that midlife is a beautiful moment to say that's not true and to actually cap our lifestyle and uncap our generosity. I think it's a great moment to experience what Jesus said that we've found and is empirically proven that it really is more blessed to give than receive. And so I think this is a time to say when is enough enough and is it possible that we might enter into a stage of great joy and greater generosity.
The book will help you ask these important questions. The subtitle is Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife, and it uses the book of Ecclesiastes and the words of the teacher to help us work through some of these questions. We're talking 40-40 vision, and as the book of Ecclesiastes does, you also draw a conclusion or two and kind of say a word about before our time is gone. What is the conclusion of the matter, as the teacher says?
Well, thankfully, the teacher gives us that after going through this incredible exercise of taking a relationship with God out of the equation and then looking at all these places, all these things that we look to find meaning and satisfaction and concluding, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it. It's not found under the sun. And so we get the conclusion. Some of the most powerful words, again, when you read this book, I think you have to get kind of the full perspective of all of the pursuits before you really see what a powerful conclusion it is. But the conclusion is this. It just says, now all has been heard. And again, this is a thoughtful, thoughtful writer who looked at all of these different, and the conclusion is this. He says, now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the duty of all mankind. I love that conclusion. It almost says at the end of this, let's not look at it from an under the sun perspective. Let's look at it from remembering that that there is a creator and that this God we know we can have a relationship thanks to the incredible gift of grace in Jesus. And so that is an awesome conclusion. Life looks differently for now and for all eternity when we can pop the illusions that we have of ultimate satisfaction and fulfillment this side of eternity and just live differently with the end in mind. So that's my conclusion. That's my challenge is every day to say the decisions that I'm making today, do they make sense in light of life? And just one practical thing, I have a friend who has a couple jars on his desk. And so he calculated the average life expectancy around 80 years old. So he created for every week, he just put a marble in the jar. And then every week he takes one marble and takes it out. It's just a physical reminder that this life is finite. And how do we live? How do we live with greater passion, with greater purpose, if we remember the brevity of this gift of life we've been given?
Well, even if you you need another change of glasses, kind of vision's a little blurry, this will help clear your vision. The book we're referencing is called 40-40 Vision, Clarifying Your Mission in Midlife. And it's taken from the wise words in the book of Ecclesiastes, well written by our guest today, Peter Greer. Peter and Greg Lafferty have co-written this new book. from InterVarsity Press called 4040 Vision. Peter, President and CEO of Hope International, and you can find out more about his writing. He's written a number of books and the great work at Hope International. You can get the link through his website, peterkgreer.com. Peter, it's an honor to visit with you again. We really appreciate you helping us just kind of work through the questions and coming up with the right kind of framework for answering these all-important issues.
Yeah, this has been great fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Peter Greer joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show today, you can always catch it. We put the interviews up online. Go to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. We'll also put a link to Peter's website as well, myfaithradio.com. You're listening to Connecting Faith.